Good afternoon, Seven Investors, and welcome to a special edition of Seven Investing Now. My name, of course, is Daniel Brooks Klein. I'm the host of the program. I am being joined by our CEO and founder, Simon Erickson. Simon, I'm looking a little redder than normal. I promise you, I was wearing sunblock, spent Saturday at the beach, which is the first time in a year I've gone to the beach, largely because we're all vaccinated. And even though the beach is outside, I live in Florida and people are not always super smart. Like, so went to the beach. It was a little stormy. We had a bad storm on Sunday, so you couldn't really go in the water. I went into about my knees. And then when we got home from the beach, I went to the pool. So my weekend was delightful. How about yours?
Lots of water. That's fantastic, Dan. We did gardening here in Houston. This is like the couple of weeks of nice weather we get before it starts getting incredibly hot. So we had to spend some time outside out here in the Houston area.
Simon, I have a black thumb, so if I ever come to visit, don't let me near your garden. The plants will just wilt like in a commercial for like Ziploc bags. With that, this is a very special episode. It's very rare that I hand over the reins of the show. It's happened a few times to interview me, but it's generally happened because we have a new advisor, and that's what we are announcing today. We'd love your questions. We'd love your comments. We're going to talk about healthcare after that. But Simon Erickson, why don't you take over the show and introduce our newest advisor here at Seven Investing?
Well, thanks very much, Dan. And to kind of set the scene for this, you know, we've accomplished a lot of things in this past year that we've been open at Seven Investing. And I'm very proud of a lot of them. But I think that the thing I'm actually the most proud about is the team that we put together here, right? Just to have the brain power all together into the same company makes it so much fun every month to see the companies that we recommend in our recommendation reports. And then on top of that, just to see the ambition of this team is incredible. I mean, to see everybody that's on the same page, pushing each other farther along to accomplish our mission of empowering others to invest in the stock market's greatest opportunities. It's something we live every day. It's something that I'm extremely proud of. And even Sam Bailey, who's on the call with us here behind the scenes right now, told me one day, she said, Simon, the team that you have put together here with Seven Investing is truly incredible. I said back, Sam, that is probably the best compliment I could ever ask for. And so with all of that as a foundation, I'm extremely excited today to announce that we are expanding our Seven Investing team even farther and hiring and bringing in our seventh lead advisor. And our seventh advisor is Dana Abramovitz. And Dana, I would like to start first and foremost by saying welcome to Seven Investing.
Thanks so much.
Dana, we'll talk a little bit about your style of investing, the types of companies you tend to look for, your passion for healthcare, and your background. But let's kind of get started on a fun note of how you and I had met 6 or 7 years ago, I want to say. It was through South by Southwest, yeah. Which for those that have been to the South by Southwest conference, it's incredible. It's probably one of the best conferences of the year. And the best part of the conference track was the healthcare track. And I found out you were doing all of the programming and inviting all of the companies and the speakers and the panelists to speak at that. And it was an incredible experience for me learning about everything in healthcare. I'm even more excited to be learning about healthcare now working alongside you here at Seven Investing.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it was a wonderful job to work at South by Southwest. I felt like my role was to really listen to, you know, what people were saying about healthcare, who was innovating, and then, you know, figuring out who those thought leaders were and then give them a platform from which to speak. So, that was really fun. And yeah, it was always fun. You know, our annual chat, at the trade show or talking about some company. So that was always fun.
Yeah. Lots of coffee and breakfast tacos, as I remember in the Austin area. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Danny, well, I'll probably say innovative about 20 times here, but just kind of to give people a feel for your background, you have an incredible resume, by the way. You have a bachelor's in pharmaceutical sciences from Purdue. You have a PhD in biochemistry from Columbia. You have a master's degree in management from Stanford and also a postdoc research fellowship at the Scripps Research Institute. That's a very impressive resume. A lot of it looks like it's pretty healthcare heavy. What can you tell me about what you've really been proud of accomplishing in your professional career? And what else do you also want to accomplish?
Yeah, so it was certainly the work that I did at South by Southwest was some of the work that I was most proud of. Again, that allowed me to take all of the work that I had done throughout my entire career. So starting in pharmacy, really starting to understand things at the molecular level, doing my postdoc, I worked at a startup company. I went to business school, transitioned to healthcare, and then, at South by Southwest, and, now at Seven Investing, kind of bringing all of that together. I think, each thing that I do, right, I'm learning more and I'm incorporating that into what I can provide. So, from the very basics at, anatomy and the molecular level and how things work biologically, and then healthcare to understanding healthcare systems. So it's the whole gamut. And that was, one of the nice things about, both my career and how I was able to, plug into South by Southwest and have that broad view. And then now combining, all that innovation, all that, that work, seeing all the different companies with my business school experience and training, to really understand, the fundamentals of different companies, so that we can, just kind of help our, the investors really understand, what they're, what they're looking at and why, choose one company over another.
Yeah. And Dana, I would say you're always several steps ahead of the curve. Right. Something that I really always enjoyed was, you see kind of the headlines, you see kind of the media picking up on what's trending or what's, in the news right now. But I think that you really understand the fundamental science of what's going on. And so when you were inviting speakers for South by Southwest or doing a PhD or a postdoc fellowship or anything, it's really understanding of the science itself. And when we say innovative, it's like, what is the impact this is going to have? Not just for investors in the financial side, but healthcare and the medical community as a whole. I think you've done a fantastic job with that. I've certainly learned a lot from you over the years. Our audience is mostly individual investors for Seven Investing. Yeah. And I know that you've worked with so many startups for several years. You've been a consultant. You've worked on the academic side of it. What kind of companies do you tend to look for? Is there certain types of maybe smaller, earlier stage healthcare companies or larger drug makers or a little bit of everything on the buffet? What are you looking for at Seven Investing here?
Well, healthcare is so broad. Right. Like small biotech companies, big pharma, but then also, companies that are addressing, healthcare, hospital systems, medical devices. I mean, it runs the full gamut. And, that's kind of one of the nice things, at South by Southwest, that I got to really broaden my focus. I can look across all of healthcare, and kind of look at that. The main thing that when I'm looking at companies, is all across, healthcare, but making sure that, the company's innovative, that it is kind of following a line with, where healthcare administration and policy is going, so that it's set up for that long-term growth, as new administrations come in and change policies. We have to make sure that all the companies that are working in the healthcare space, a lot of times their revenue is based on reimbursement models, and so just really understanding that. I'm hoping to provide something across the entire healthcare spectrum. Certainly my background, is in the molecules. So I will, dive deep into the science, especially in the biotech and the pharma companies, to really understand and help, our investors, figure that out, because a lot of times, the science is really complicated, just because most people don't study science, right? And I have that advantage where, I've spent my entire decades-long career studying the science, and then flavoring in the finance component, so that I can really provide that, that broader view.
Well, I'm extremely excited to be working with you here at Seven Investing, Dana. For everyone who wants to follow Dana, she's at Dana Abramovitz 7. On Twitter. We also, you can always send an email to us at info@7investing.com, welcoming her to the team. I really do mean this when I say that. I think that out of everyone that I know, I think Dana knows more than anyone when it comes to what's going on in healthcare. And this is an industry that's $4 trillion in the United States. Huge opportunity for large and small companies alike. I'm excited to go out and find the opportunities for investors out there. Dana, once again, welcome to Seven Investing.
Thanks so much.
And Dan, I'll hand it back to you on that note to take us to the rest of the program.
We're going to talk three key trends in healthcare. We are so excited to have Dana here. The whole team, we didn't know her. This is a little different than some of the other picks where at least some of the team knew her, but we were all really excited to meet her. And we're excited to start seeing the stocks she picks. And Simon, our new picks come out on May 1st. I know I'm really excited about my pick. I think people are going to be a little bit surprised about my pick. But if someone wants access to the 7 Investing picks, because we don't just do the free show and the podcast, we sell our 7 highest conviction picks each month. Every advisor makes a pick, writes an in-depth recommendation. We tape a video call, probably, I don't know, what's it going to be, like 4 hours where we're all...
17 hours probably, Dan, this month.
Yeah, where we all create a slideshow and present our pick and everyone can push back. So you're going to get to watch Dana ask Max questions because none of us are really all that good at doing that. You're going to be able to watch Max ask Dana questions. But Simon, if someone wants to join, now one option is that they drive to your house and say and hand you $17 every month. But that's very inefficient. Generally, how would they do it?
7investing.com/subscribe is how you can sign up with a subscription for 7 Investing. Again, like you said, Dan, $17 a month or $170 a year. I really think it's the best deal on the internet out there right now. We've got lots of letters after our names, PhDs and MBAs and masters on this team going out there and finding the best stock market opportunities. Dana's found her first opportunity. We're not going to reveal it on this show, but it was a company I was unaware of before, and I'm actually really excited about it. We're going to reveal her pick and everyone else's pick on May 1st.
Simon, aside from being near my wife who has a PhD, the closest I've come to a PhD is renting a rug doctor. Like I am well set up for work, was not well set up for school. That was definitely, I know a lot of my teachers find it hysterical that I spend my day doing homework essentially now, because there was none of that being done when I was actually in school. But we're going to talk three key trends in healthcare. And as is our tradition on 7 Investing Now, we're going to throw Dana right into the deep end. It's her first show, and we are going to lead off. And she wants to talk about what's next for mRNA when it comes to drug development. I will point out that I learned on this show that it's mRNA, not Mr. NA. Like, so this is a new tech for many of us who I've taken the Pfizer vaccine. So I've had an mRNA based vaccine, and this is not a technology that the general public really knows about, but it could be a major platform going forward. Dana, what's next for mRNA technology?
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, no. So the M stands for message. So it's messenger RNA. And that's the cool thing, right, is that that message is translating what's in our genes to what our cells are going to turn into a protein. mRNA technology and just the ability to, inject or, give a new cell that that new message for the cellular structure to create is just a new tool for scientists and drug developers. So it's just just another new tool in their toolbox, which is great. The interesting thing, and I know there are a lot of people that are, talking about the vaccines and they're worried about the vaccines, and that drives me crazy. It's just, this is not new. Messenger RNA, it's just part of our, the central dogma of biology and how information that's stored in our genes in the form of DNA gets translated into protein, which is the cellular machinery. And it's, something that people have been studying for decades now. That's how we were able to turn, all of that knowledge, including knowledge that I contributed to, right? So, I'm from the RNA field, turning that into actionable tool, right? We were able to do it so quickly because, people have been studying it for so long. So it's not new. It's just that it's now a new tool because we've figured out how to deliver it to a cell. The cool thing is, right, and so now you can, use it to treat diseases of missplicing. So the process of, I know I'm getting deep into the science.
I was going to say, you're going to have to explain.
I've got my coffee. I'm ready, Dana.
You're going to have to explain missplicing. That is not a term I've ever heard before.
Right. Okay. So, biology is so awesome, right? So, you know, how can, so our cells are really efficient, right? So we have in our DNA the ability to have multiple types of information in one thing, right? In one piece, in one gene, right? But we can make it into different proteins based on different cells, different needs by removing parts of it and splicing it together. And that's all done as the RNA, right? So the DNA gets transcribed, it becomes a messenger RNA, and then it splices and we remove bits, so introns, splice it all together. And then now you have the mature mRNA, that mature message that gets translated into the protein. So this is basic biology.
So from a practical point of view, from what I've read, the COVID vaccine was a relatively easy application of this because of how it's delivered. It's not so simple to say that the road to other uses of mRNA, it's not necessarily going to go as quickly. And also, we're not going to have half the medical companies in the world pursuing it with billions of dollars. But realistically, what do you think is next in the pipeline that we'll be using mRNA for?
Right. So, my guess, so there are diseases where, you know, that maturation of the message fails, right? So neurological diseases like ALS or Parkinson's is one of those, right? And then there are a lot of diseases where a protein drug, a biologic is used, right? So insulin, for example, you can, people with diabetes can use insulin, right? So sometimes that protein can't be made into a drug, right? Because making that protein in vitro, right? So outside of the cellular machinery doesn't work because the protein has to fold into a three-dimensional shape in order for it to be active. And if you do it outside of the cellular structure, it may not fold into the proper shape, or the delivery. So if you have to lyophilize it and reconstitute, so dry it down, remake it into a liquid to inject, it may lose its shape, right? But with this mRNA technology, you can give it to a cell, and then the cell will make the proper correct protein, and it'll do its own folding, right? So, that's a possibility. The caveat, so again, it's a tool, and I'm not saying that everybody's going to be able to do it, right? These are possible uses for the technology. There are caveats, right? So, making sure that the mRNA gets to the right cell type that needs to produce that protein, right? So all cells go through that same, process of maturing and making a protein. But not every cell needs to make that protein, right? So how do you deliver it to the right cell? So that's going to be a delivery problem. We see with, cancer drugs and using antibodies to deliver. So, there's that possibility. It hasn't been tested, right? So, we have that one thing. The next thing is, we're not actually fixing the gene. So that would be a gene editing tool, right? mRNA degrades, a patient who would be using this as a treatment would need to, continually make it, right? And so, like with the vaccine, with the Pfizer and the Moderna, you get two doses, your cell makes the antibody or the antigen spike protein so that your system can make the antibodies for it. That's a great technology, using it for drug treatment. We're going to have to figure that out and just see if it's something that patients are really going to want to utilize. And then, the last one, is just titrating and making sure the right amount of RNA is producing the right protein, the amount of protein for the treatment. So, there's still a lot to be done, but the cool thing is, and, like I said, people since, you know, Tom Cech won the Nobel Prize for, you know, looking at RNA splicing and seeing cell splicing in 1993. You know, people have been studying, you know, RNA, like, what can we do with it, right? So this is just, you know, it's a tool that we can do, that we can use. You know, it's really exciting, and, you know, yeah, we'll see. There's lots of potential and possibility.
Yet another year I did not win the Nobel Prize. I didn't do anything worthy of it, but I kind of feel like I should get one. Anyway, Simon Erickson, you wanted to weigh in here.
Well, Dan, first of all, I hope that you make your coffee extra strong when we start talking about messenger RNA with Dana on the show. Good luck keeping up for both of us, right?
Here's the thing. She actually said in our notes that as a grad student, she made messenger RNA. And she said that to illustrate that this is relatively cheap and easy to do, and it's, of course, gotten more efficient. I'm not sure in college I could make coffee. So this was it's weird enough to say, like, when I was in college, coffee wasn't as big a thing as it is now. Like, there wasn't really Starbucks. So, but I am not sure if you gave me a pot and the requisite stuff and you're making mRNA, Max is making who knows what, in his basement. So I feel a little bit left behind. That said, I now make an excellent risotto. Simon, you wanted to weigh in with some comments here.
But this is innovation. I mean, this is, I think, why I'm so excited to work with Dana and take notes every time Dana says these things, because this is where the field is heading. This is where the science wants to go. Dana, one thing that I just wanted to add that you mentioned was the delivery mechanism for such of these is so important, right? We talk about kind of upstream versus downstream, right? Do we want to edit the genome and change the genes themselves? Or do we want to, you know, change how they get expressed and change the RNA and you make sure that, you know, the proteins that we do not want to be created are not being created? I really like the approach of RNA in the fact that it's kind of tissue and organ specific, right? You don't have to have it go to your ears and your feet and your toes and your liver all at the same time. You can actually pick where the problems are occurring. And I think that might be one of the most promising areas of this field of research.
Yeah. And then, and that's going to be the delivery and, you know, finding the, that mechanism to target those individual cells. And, you know, like I mentioned, you know, we are doing it with, you know, some cancer technologies and the antibodies and just, you know, we know enough about different cell types and, you know, like what, types of receptors it has so that we can kind of, you know, target it. But, you know, like, you know, I'm not saying that this is happening tomorrow. I'm just saying that this is now a new tool and we can explore it. And, you know, it's just so exciting that we were able to, you know, find a use for this so quickly, you know, just because of the decades long basic research into this problem.
And I'll just jump in and say, thank you, science. Like as a layperson, it tends to feel like science is standing still because there aren't generally news articles, that normal people are reading about, you know, advancements in mRNA. And it takes an awful lot behind the scenes that you don't see before something happens. That's why there's some vaccine skepticism, because to the average person, they go, wait a minute, did they just spin this vaccine up in 6 months? And here's the reality. There's 20 plus years of research going into this, and then a need came along. So it's sort of like, you know, if you're really, really good at, starting a fire because you like to camp, and then all of a sudden you find yourself without power in the middle of nowhere, those skills come in. You practice them, you learn them. That is what is happening here. But we want to talk three key trends in healthcare. And Dana actually has to leave at about 5:30. So I wanted to get Simon's in because I think Dana's going to weigh in on this as well. And Simon wants to talk about, can value-based care bring down the cost of healthcare? Healthcare, as we know, very, very expensive. I've talked about this many years ago, 6 or 7, 8 now, when I worked at the Boston Globe. I had New York Times health insurance, went to the doctor, knew what I had wrong because my wife had strep throat. The doctor came in and I said, my wife has strep throat. The doctor wrote me a prescription and then left. It took maybe 90 seconds and I got an itemized bill for $570. Now, my insurance paid the vast majority of that, but there is no part of that service that was worth $570. I understand you're paying for the expertise, the medical school, all of the infrastructure, still not worth $570. Simon Erickson, value-based healthcare.
Yeah, I think this is one of the big innovations in healthcare, Dan, just like you mentioned, is that, yeah, I want to kind of connect the dots between what Dana just said, which is really innovative science, and then the business commercial side of this too, right? Of how are we going to pay for some things like this? And we started the program talking about $4 trillion a year in America. We've come a long way, in getting the cost of developing drugs down, but it still costs on average $1.2 billion and 10 years of scientific research to get anything commercialized and actually out there that you can be purchasing pills. And so how do we address this? You know, when we start talking about things like CAR T, CRISPR gene editing, mRNA, a lot of these can run over several hundreds of thousands of dollars per patient per treatment. And I think one of the things that's been holding back a lot of this innovative science has been, how does an insurer transition from something that's to something that's so expensive and actually get it adopted in hospitals? And I think that this concept of value-based care is an approach that's going to be seen a lot more in this, which is basically pay based on the performance of the drugs and the outcomes that you're seeing in patients, and make sure that it's working to justify the cost and the ROI of this. And so I want to give an example of this. You know, there's plenty of them out there, but I like the one of Spark Therapeutics a couple of years ago. This is a company that was addressing macular degeneration. This is retinal eye diseases, blindness, you know, basically that was found in children, but it was correctable with gene therapies. And so they released a drug like Luxturna that would cost $425,000 per eye, or $850,000 for both eyes.
A bargain. A bargain at any price.
It was an incredible bargain compared to, you know, not being able to see the rest of your life, having to have a helper, you know, assist you through everything through decades. It was an incredible bargain. But then if you're paying $850,000 up front, you've got to make sure that it's going to work. And so what did Spark do? You know, they set up for reimbursement a short-term efficacy study and then a longer-term durability study, where there would be payments that would be made by insurers or whoever the payer was that would come over time as long as the patient responded as they expected to respond. And for a drug like this that showed higher than 90% efficacy, very, very strong drug, great for science, great for patients, that was made possible by this kind of shift to value-based care. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of that, especially as innovation in this field continues.
Simon, I know Dana wants to weigh in, but is this similar to what we're seeing with like a shift to telemedicine and health insurance companies doing things like, if you hit your appointments, or, you know, if you prove that you've gone to the gym or stopped smoking or whatever it is, they're incentivizing actual good health. So is incentivizing efficacy kind of the same thing?
Similar in the idea, Dan. I think that it really goes after the most expensive conditions out there, right? Like, we know we need to be healthy. We know we need fitness data. We want to check in and make sure that, you know, we're running and eating healthy and all those things. But things like immunotherapies, you know, in the full field of oncology, some of the stuff that's really, really expensive out there needs to be justified that it's working. And I think that this is, you know, one of those fields. Yes, there's the other side of it too, that's kind of more continually checking in on you, but I'm talking about kind of the most expensive treatments that are available.
Dana, I know you wanted to get some words in, and I know you have to go. So why don't you say your piece on value-based care?
So value-based care is another area where I've done some work more recently. A lot of it came from, what the Center for Medicare and Medicaid was services were doing, coming out of the Affordable Care Act. So, again, innovation, but, innovation in terms of, reimbursement and payment and, making sure that, patients were getting the services that they were needing that, Medicare and Medicaid were paying for. Right. And so, I know that, and this was, just beyond necessarily drugs, but, like surgeries, in hospitals. Right. So, different medical devices. So how do you, check on those things? Sorry, the answering machine is turning on.
Someone is very excited about this topic Dana's talking about.
Right? We've had
dogs, we've had babies, I disappeared once, my computer just went absolutely insane. There is nothing that can't disrupt. We're going to talk about this a lot more. Dana's going to be a regular presence here on 7 Investing Now, but she has a pre-existing engagement and has to go. So I don't want her to be late. That would be.
I want to say I have a little bit more time watching the time, but I just wanted to say that, value-based care, extends beyond, just drug development. And so a lot of the other, things in healthcare. So, what insurers are doing, what hospital systems are doing, people that are in, the medical devices as well. So, all of that focus is going to, play a part in looking at the companies that we're evaluating.
That was Dana Abramovitz. We are so excited to have her as our newest investor on 7 Investing Now. Actually hit us up at 7 Investing with questions for Dana, podcast topics you'd like her to do with myself and Max, segments we want to do in this show. It's a different perspective than from where Max Chatsko is coming from, but it's also a very complementary perspective, so it makes us immeasurably stronger as a team. It is also going to be fun when I talk about retail, having a different perspective, being able to talk about that as well. With that, Dana, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
We will see you, if not later this week, certainly next week. And we will see you Friday on the team call, which goes live on the 8th. So if you join at 7investing.com/subscribe, you will be able to see Dana and her first pick live. Well, not live, taped. And defending it, explaining it to all of us. You'll get to watch Max ask some great questions. But with that, I'm going to talk about the third key healthcare giveaway takeaway. And that is, can Amazon, Apple, or Google disrupt the healthcare market? So here's how I look at it. You have a lot of insurance companies whose interests are keeping things the same. They might go incrementally and maybe they'll make some little changes like paying for a teledoc appointment. They might rotate in different drugs that they'll cover and different things that they won't, but they don't want a disruption. They don't want a disruption because they are the thing being disrupted. So if you look at Amazon, they have every incentive to say, we are spending X amount of billions of dollars a year on employee healthcare. How can we build something for our employees that then becomes something we can roll out to other companies? And that's what they're doing. So they have a system they piloted in Seattle where if you wake up, Simon, and you don't feel well, you have the sniffles or maybe your stomach's not feeling so great, you can have a teledoc appointment. And if the doctor decides you need it, Amazon will dispatch a nurse to your house. And that nurse will take vitals, maybe take a blood sample, maybe take some other unfortunate samples, whatever it is you need to be giving, they'll do that. So you're having this sort of hybrid approach where you're getting full-on care, and that can be cheaper than actually going through a health insurance company because there's not necessarily a middleman. And now it might be a contracted model. Amazon uses a lot of contractors to supplement its workforce. So like, you know, the same way it's the janitor might be a contractor working for a third company, the nurse and the doctor might work that way as well. But they have the heft to figure this out. Google, Amazon, and Apple also all have healthcare devices. So I am wearing my Apple Watch, and my Apple Watch tends to terrify me because I see way too much information about my heart rate. So my resting heart rate is in the 60s, but when I'm doing this type of rant, it goes up to about 104. That causes me to Google what's a normal heart rate and should your heart rate go up this much just from talking. And so, but it also gives me all sorts of information. Did I move enough today? Did I stand? There's a device from Amazon that will actually give you like sleep patterns. And the same thing with Fitbit, which is a Google product where you can wear it and it will tell you you're not sleeping enough, you're not getting enough REM sleep. All of this is going to sort of filter into being able to disrupt healthcare. One of the things Apple asks for you to do when you wear the watch is, can we aggregate your data? So there's an AI into this. Simon, we're going to talk about AI with Steve on Friday's show based on someone asking us on Twitter. But so imagine if they go and notice a trend of people who are Simon's general health. Simon's in good health, he's in good shape, he works out, you know, all of those things. Oh my God, they have a predilection towards some form of cancer, or they get ALS at a higher rate, or who knows what it is. But there's data you can't necessarily aggregate across doctors and platforms that you can through devices like the Apple Watch or the Fitbit. So I think there's gonna be massive disruption in this space as they learn more data and can just say, hey, why is there a cancer cluster in Houston? And maybe they'll find out that there's something wrong with the water or there's something environmentally causing it. We're going to get actionable changes. We're also going to get much more ability. You know, we've talked about the insurance company. I think Steve uses it, that you let them monitor your driving. And if you prove to be a safe driver, you pay a lower rate. A lot of insurance companies use some form of that, but that particular company is actively monitoring. You might get, hey, Simon, if you are watch says that you're getting the proper exercise every day, we'll actually charge you a lower rate. And same thing if we see that your food intake is better, we're going to see a lot of that, and it's really going to upset the status quo. Again, not a lot of incentive for the CVSs and the Walgreens and the Aetnas and the insurance companies of the world to want this type of change, but we're absolutely going to have it. Sam Bailey, there's a question from our very own Max Chasko. Let's take that one. As I think Apple's ongoing privacy push is not so subtle indication of its health ambitions. Privacy and health information go hand in hand. I think you're right. And Apple's been very careful to say that if I let them use my health info, no one's going to know it's Dan Klein's health info. It's just going to be put into a group of 47-year-olds, lives in Florida, still could lose a little bit of weight, but is active and works out. Whatever the group they decide, it works a lot like television ratings. Like with television ratings, we don't actually know what Simon watches, but we know what people like Simon watch. And that sets advertising rates. We're going to see that with healthcare. Simon Erickson, I know you wanted to weigh in here. Aside from my being a little bit silly about your particular aggregating information, what did you want to add to the topic of tech and health?
Well, I agree with you, Dan. This is a big trend that we should be paying attention to. And, we know that hospitals are overcrowded, especially primary care physicians are overcrowded. The system as a whole is kind of stressed out. And there's got to be a more proactive, predictive way to improve healthcare. And this is the way to do it, right? All the companies are using AI. All the tech companies know how to do it. It's the exact same way of monitoring your driving. If you're living a healthy life, to get better rates. And in my opinion, I think this goes to the employers. I think that the way that you actually provide the incentive, because there's a lot of privacy concerns, like you mentioned, people are kind of, I just don't know if I want to have those tech companies have access to all my data. But if you're working for a company that picks up the tab for most of your healthcare insurance, and they say, hey, if you sign up for this program that we have with Apple, we guarantee your data is safe and your privacy is safe. And you're going to get a bonus, an incentive of $5,000 a year to do it. And we want to encourage as many people as want to do this. And if you don't, that's fine too. It's an opt-in program. I think you probably would get a lot of people that would say, yeah, I'll take the money and I'll be healthier. And I'm comfortable with this. So we'll see how it plays out. It's definitely an incentive, not only for the system as a whole, but those tech companies. Healthcare is a new frontier for them.
Yeah. And the reality is these tech companies are so big that it makes sense for them to say, okay, we're spending whatever the number is, $7,000 per year per family of employees, because your health insurance at these companies are really good. Like when I was a contractor at Microsoft, so I wasn't on their healthcare plan, but I was privy to what it was. And it didn't quite cover 100%, because if you cover 100%, people take it that don't need it, that have health insurance options from elsewhere, but it covered basically everything. And they realized things like paying for your gym, or you could buy a piece of exercise equipment every year, that actually improved the health of their workers. We're seeing in the US a change to the attitude of healthcare. I think that there's one thing, well, there's a few things the pandemic has taught us. First, you want the guy making your burrito to have paid sick days, because the last thing you want is him to come into work, infect a bunch of people because he was worried about getting paid or not getting paid. The second thing we've learned is that if Simon's not feeling well, maybe he can do his meeting over Zoom. It's not that important to be in person. It's nice. I miss in person, but we understand the sort of risk reward of it. That's going to allow companies to experiment. We've seen this on sort of a private level. There are a number of, let's call them faith-based, where people of the same religion are banding together, paying money in, and essentially hiring doctors. And basically all your healthcare needs are free, and you're buying disaster insurance in case something wrong happens and you need to go to the hospital or get. So there are all sorts of models, and the breadth, the scale of an Amazon. Imagine if Amazon decides, and they are partnering with other companies, but if they say, hey, any company in a state Amazon has distribution in, you can buy into this. And all of a sudden, a small company like Seven Investing can offer Amazon concierge healthcare service. Like, that would be a massive, massive benefit. And right now, we're a company that has employees in multiple states. It's really multiple countries, which not an issue there, because Australia has universal healthcare. So Otterbahn does not need that. But the rest of us, it would be tricky for you to find healthcare that could operate in each state. It becomes very much like sales tax, which is unbelievably difficult to figure out as you're selling around the country. It's why you don't do it. It's why the computer programs do it. So going forward, I think this is what's going to change. And people ask me all the time, do I think Apple can go from a $1 trillion company to a $4 trillion company. Like, and I think they can, because healthcare is massive. And I think it's all going to be different. The one thing I would tell you to sell, don't own insurance companies. I don't think the future is bright for things we don't like that don't perform well. How many of you have had a sick relative have to fight for medicine? I have a cousin who's lifelong will be battling leukemia, and they found a pill that would work for him and did work for him for a number of years. He's on something else now. And it was, they wouldn't cover it. And like, he had to fight it. And eventually they did approve it. But that's a system people don't like. I liken it to cable. We all got cable from our cable provider and watched our bills steadily go up while the service went down until we didn't have to. And we're going to be in a case with healthcare where we don't have to.
Well, and Dan, to say to that too, I mean, like, I think that that is something that needs innovation, right? We chatted about value-based care earlier in the program. And the insurance companies are on the same page. They don't want to just be spending a ton of money for, you know, something that's reactive. They want to be proactive in keeping people healthy too. I think that's going to kind of show, you know, who is ahead of the curve on changing this system. And we talked a lot about also kind of the fitness side of this, the basic health, the primary care side of it. This is kind of more of a nudge, right? Eat healthier, be healthier, sleep more, the things we kind of already know. That's a very, very different topic than the what I would consider like the really big things that we really should know about, right? Like, say we were talking about genomes earlier. Say that I am predisposed with a gene that I can see through a DNA sequence that I take, that I'm predisposed to develop a certain form of cancer. But if we could correct that really, really early on, I wouldn't get it. And I wouldn't have to go through all the treatment later on in life. That's a much, much bigger problem than just saying, hey, you sign me, you need to sleep more. And so like the diagnostic side of this, especially in oncology and the more expensive, more serious conditions, that's going to be really where people are going to say, hey, AI, get this right. Make sure you're right. We can't be 95% sure. We need to be 100% sure that this is what you see and this is how we treat it. That's a $100 billion plus per year that we're spending on cancer drugs alone. Never mind the time and the treatment too. That's a huge opportunity for somebody who cracks this.
Yeah. And you don't have to be 100% right. So let's say what happens is you run all your markers, you do all your genetic testing, and it's a Simon, you are more likely than most to get a certain type of cancer. But if you avoid these things, you're less likely to get that cancer. You can make not painful proactive steps that, okay, maybe you drink less coffee or you know, or whatever. Don't have as much red meat or whatever it is. Well, those aren't major steps, and they're going to be beneficial even if it turns out you beat the odds and don't get that type of cancer. So I think we're going to have two things. We're going to have an absolute medicinal overhaul of how we deliver drugs, how we test drugs, and then we're going to have a disruption to the system of, you know, years ago, I would have said it would have been governmental, where we all understand the idea that we're paying X amount of billions into healthcare and a lot of it is getting wasted and we should probably just all have healthcare. That's become so politicized. I don't expect that to happen. I do think companies, which have a lot of power because they're spending a lot of money on healthcare, are going to look at how they're spending money and create or find a better way. And then I don't want to say benevolently, because there might be a markup on it. They are then going to make that available to other companies, and scale is going to matter. So I'm really excited about this. We're going to be talking about this with the whole team, but most specifically with Dana, with Max. I'm looking forward to it. Simon, this was a weird show. We're not doing many of the regular segments, but we are going to hit our finisher. Sam Bailey, if you could share the graphic. Which market segment will create the most wealth for investors over the next decade? Only about 30% thought it was healthcare. About 56% thought it was artificial intelligence. 5.5% thought cannabis. And only 7.7% said space. Simon, if you told me the next 30 years, I think I would have said space. I think the idea of colonizing, like, I believe very much in the we can't stay on Earth. We have to go to other planets. There, you know, first it'll be space tourism, and then it'll be literally like, oh yeah, my kid lives on Neptune or whatever it happens to be. It's probably not space travel that looks anything like we know now. Which of these segments would you have picked?
I would like the one that combines all four of them together, Dan, where it's healthcare and AI and cannabis and space. There's some opportunity that appeals to all of those. You know, three of them go vertical, and then AI goes horizontal, which is why I voted for B for this one, because I think AI can be used kind of for a whole bunch of different industries, and it will be used. It's almost like when we say AI, I think that in maybe even 5 years' time, it's not even a buzzword, because it's like, oh yeah, we're using machine learning for this, and this part of our business. So I would vote B personally.
My favorite use of AI, and this flew under the radar, but about 18 months ago, maybe, McDonald's bought an AI company. And they use that AI in their drive-through line. So instead of the old line of like, would you like to supersize that? Or would you like fries with that? Or could I interest you in a Coke or whatever they were trying as their upsell? They're using AI to determine based on the weather, the makeup of you, your car, whatever it is, what upsell to sell you. So they might look at me and go, oh, would you like a McFlurry with that? They might look at you and go, oh, hey, can we get you a second cup of coffee there? Whatever it is. So you're going to see AI. You might not even see it. There is AI in places where you don't know where it is. I actually talked with an executive from Chick-fil-A on a cruise ship who said they technically could do a facial scan and know what you're going to order, but they've decided that, you know, that their customers would not like that. They don't want to see pre-populated orders. Like, but that's how accurate it can be. Amazon, we've talked about this many times, uses AI to pack boxes before you order it. So like today I ordered some tea and some razor blades, and they would know at some point before I place that order, that statistically 100% likely someone's going to order that, and they've already packed it before my name goes on the order. So we're going to see AI in all sorts of places. In 10 years, I actually think that's the one. Healthcare, it's a longer horizon, and I think a lot of money's going to move around in that space. It is going to create wealth. It's also going to create failures. Like you're going to see, you know, look, I love CVS, the retail business. I don't love CVS, the they own Aetna part of the business. I think that's going to be very problematic, but even CVS is working to disrupt healthcare with their minute clinics, with their ability to administer vaccines and deal with pretty much everything up to a full physical, like anything, you know, more simple than that you can handle on a walk-in basis. And that's kind of disrupting their own business, which is a little bit interesting. It's going to be something we talk about quite a bit on the show. Simon, I'll give you the last word here.
And our colleague, Steve Symington, who's on the, you know, the show right now here with us, he's actually finding those opportunities for the innovators that are using AI for verticals, for specific opportunities. I know that several of his recommendations in recent months have been tapped into AI. Pretty exciting stuff, if you ask me, that he's looking at right now, Dan.
Steve will be joining me and Matt Cochran on the Friday edition of 7 Investing. Now, there could be more of us. We're going to do shows with all six of us or all seven of us. We're going to do shows with just one-on-one. We're going to mix it up regularly. Today was exciting. I have to say, I don't like sitting in the background, but it was fun to watch Dana. And for those of you, you know, who to give a little bit behind the scenes, Dana was having technical problems and logged on for the show correctly maybe 18 seconds before we went live. Literally, she couldn't get her camera to work. At the last second, one of us figured out, hey, maybe change browsers. She had to restart her computer. It was touch and go whether Dana would have been calling in on a soup can and a string. So it is always exciting. Sam Bailey, I apologize for any gray hairs this caused you. We will promise we will try to make that not happen on Wednesday. If you'd like to get in touch with us, it's very easy. It is info@7investing.com. That's our email. That's for questions about your membership. You're thinking about joining. You got a great business partnership you'd like to talk to us about, whatever it is. If you want to interact with us in more of a dialogue about companies, about, you know, trends in our spaces, that's @7investing on Twitter. We're also on LinkedIn. We are on pretty much every platform you can go to. Simon's working on our TikTok where he does dance interpretations of our picks. We have not allowed that one yet, but we're always happy to talk on Twitter. I'm pretty much on Twitter like 14 hours a day answering comments. I pretty much respond to everything. Very excited about all the new people Dana will bring into the fold. Simon, you knocked it out of the park with this one.
I think so, Dan. And, you know, again, at Dana Abramovitz 7, for anyone who wants to follow Dana on Twitter, we are also going to send out an invitation later today, not only announcing Dana joining to the team to our subscribers, but also inviting them to a Friday subscriber call where we're going to be talking about our previous recommendations, kind of any questions you want to ask us about our previous picks. Dana's going to be sharing some more insight about healthcare, and we're going to be seeing that later this afternoon. So if you want to get started with 7 Investing today, it's a great time because Friday is going to be a big day for us to discuss our previous recommendations.
Friday is a coffee and a Red Bull day. Just to give you the schedule, at 10 o'clock, we talk to our new subscribers. That call is really about how our service works, the basics of investing, how to get a brokerage account, all those sort of things. At 11 to 12:30, we update our members on many of our past picks. We each bring a few to the table, and then we also take questions. We'll also take questions leading up to that. So if you're a member and there's something you want us to talk about, a past pick on that show, hit us up at info@7investing.com. Don't do it publicly on Twitter because we don't share what the past picks were on Twitter, but you could certainly DM us. I know that my DMs I have to approve you, but everyone can DM me as long as we're connected. So more than happy to do that. And then, of course, at 12:30, we do 7 Investing Now. So that's 10 o'clock to about 1:30. We take 20 minutes off, more or less, and then we tape our marathon pitch call where we all lay out our case for our May stocks. You want to get in now. 7investing.com. I've said this before. We are charging 7-Eleven prices for a Morton's experience. You are getting a top-tier investing service, and we've kept it inexpensive because we want everyone to be in. If you're someone spending hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars with a financial advisor, why are you doing that? You could be a member at 7investing and get access to our picks. If you're new to investing, it's affordable. We want everyone in the tent. With that, for Simon Erickson, I am Dan Klein. I am tired. This was an exciting, adventurous show. We will be back on Wednesday. See you then.
A reminder that people on this program may hold positions in the companies that are mentioned. Buying and selling stock carries financial risk, which could include the loss of capital. The views in this program should not be taken as personalized advice. Before acting on any of the information provided, listeners are encouraged to consult a financial or tax professional.